You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Tariq Tapa grew up in the United States but spent summers in Kashmir with his father's family. So when he made his first film, he decided to go back and tell a story about that troubled region. The result is Zero Bridge, an unlikely love story that's been nominated for two Independent Spirit Awards as well as awards at the Venice and Los Angeles Film Festivals. It opens tomorrow here in New York at the Film Forum on West Houston Street. I'm very pleased that it brings Tariq Tapa to our show today. Hello.
It's great to be here, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
Had you done much film directing before you did this? This is a full-length feature film.
It's my first feature film. Before this, I made shorts for about 10 or 12 years. But I wanted to do a story in Kashmir because it had been a long fascination for me. Although I grew up in New York City, I'm from East 4th Street. My father's from Kashmir. My extended family still lives in Srinagar. And I just was always fascinated by it as a world that I was always hearing about as sort of rich material for stories.
I don't remember any other feature films about Kashmir. I've seen a few documentaries. Is there any kind of feature film tradition there?
Well, there hasn't been, to the best of my knowledge, a film made there in 40 years. And that for all sorts of reasons. I'm sure people are familiar with all of the conflict that's been going there, and among the many casualties of that is the loss of a cinema.
But I would have thought that all of the conflict would have inspired filmmakers as well.
Well, it's true. And nowadays it's easier to have access than it was a generation before. But still, even just having a baseline of access. The other thing is, I think, the particular approach that I try to take with this film. The story puts the political situation really in the background. And it's quite unique and it stands apart in that regard. It focuses much more on the humanity of the characters and in their situation than it does on the politics or on the landscape. See, most documentaries or Western documentaries or news reports tend to either focus on the politics. Bollywood films tend to treat the location as an exotic backdrop. And both
and people always talk about it, just how beautiful Kashmir is. You don't get any sense of that from this film.
Well,
kind of grungy.
Well, the thing is that beauty can be quite an insidious thing. It can be quite a distracting thing. And for the people who live there, for whom they're not simply tourists 2 weeks out of the year, 13 million people live in the region, 1.5 million live in Srinagar, the capital city of India-controlled Kashmir. That's what daily life is. And so the texture of the film tries to capture the kind of grainy, smeariness of the reality there.
And Dilawar, the main character, could be an adolescent anywhere seeking independence, wanting to go out and see the world and trying to make some money to be able to get through.
Certainly. Well, I think that because Kashmir is so inaccessible, both geographically and, let's say, politically, that for the purposes of telling a story, it would be too confrontational. It would violate the willing suspension of disbelief, which is the necessary predicate for telling any story. And so I decided to, it's very useful when you, in fiction, to deploy surrogates for the audience, a character who's just trying to read the action, figure out what's going on for his own credible, dramatic reasons. So in this case, I created a young character who, because of his youth, doesn't know the name of the world, doesn't know his own name in the world. And so in trying to figure out the rules of the game, the viewer goes along with him on his journey.
You said that you wanted this film to be like folk art. Can you explain that?
Sure. Well, in the sense that folk tales have a simplicity to them, which is universal. Anyone, anywhere understands and knows by heart folk tales or folk music or folk songs. That's not to say, I would hurry to add, that I was trying to take characters and turn them into abstractions. I was actually interested in just the reverse of that. I was trying to take all of these abstract ideas about Kashmir and make them flesh and blood. I wanted to show the humanity of these particular individuals more intimately than you get a sense of in most of the other forms which we've had, which have not been many to begin with, about Kashmir.
And the film has the feeling of a documentary at times. How much were you drawing upon what a documentary filmmaker might shoot in Kashmir if he was want to make a film about the troubled aspects of it that weren't political, the economic troubles, or just the problems of growing up in this isolated area?
Well, my sense is that if you focus in close-up on the routines of any individual's daily life, and if you stick with the individual long enough, then the implications of the social and political systems make themselves felt and quite quickly. So there is no need to start off with rhetoric in the film. Rhetoric, I think, tends to be much more effective in literature or on stage, but in film it tends to fall flat. I'm much more interested in the behavior. And so that's really what I try to focus on. I suppose you could say somewhat like a documentary filmmaker would just impartially observe what's going on.
But did you have much of a crew?
No, in fact, I was entirely on my own. That's another
way.
You
shot it like a documentary.
Exactly.
One person sat doing sound and camera work as well.
That's exactly right. I was doing sound, shooting, all while monitoring performance and doing retakes and so forth.
Do you speak Kashmiri?
You know, I'd say probably about 40% or so.
And so that must have been difficult, too. Here you are shooting this film. People must have wondered what the heck you were doing.
Oh, sure. And people still wonder that even here in New York City. You know, first of all, I was greatly assisted by translators, cousins of mine who were curious and just wanted to sort of observe what was going on during the shooting. And but more than that, I would say that, you know, what cinema does best is photograph unspoken stories. So if you're ultimately interested in behavior, not in language, then you are able to really kind of get away with a certain threshold appeal in terms of simple physical words that people use just in the course of everyday conversation. You don't have to rely on language to convey the inner lives of the characters because the behavior will do that.
Dilawar is a teen whose mother abandoned him and left him with a cruel uncle. Can we see him as a metaphor for Kashmir?
Well, that's a good question. I certainly tried to have the, as I talked before about surrogate characters, I wanted his experience to not be allegorical, but to certainly embody certain aspects of the region. Like the region itself, he is an orphan, torn between two warring parent nations, let's say. Like the region, he is seeking his own autonomy, as young people tend to try to do in whatever situation or country they live in. And but at the same time, the issue of autonomy is fraught with all sorts of moral ambiguities. Is it possible? Is autonomy desirable? Is it warranted? And so forth. So I decided that this would also be a morally ambiguous main character.
Well, we wonder whether Dilawar actually could function on his own. He tries his hand at petty crime, isn't very good at it. He earns money doing homework for other kids. I guess he has to do anything to get by. Is it difficult for young people to make enough to survive in the Indian-controlled part of Kashmir?
Well, let me just preface this by saying I'm in no way a spokesman for anything except this movie, and so I'm not competent to assess anything. But
you don't know how it compares to other parts of India.
No, but I would say that in general, based on the people who helped make the movie and the people who appear in the movie, that there's a general sense in which Kashmir does not seem to be in their futures. They believe it's in their present, it's in their past, but they don't want it to be in their futures.
And this the two main characters here, Dilawar and a woman named Bani, who is better educated. She's been to the United States to study physics. I don't want to go into all the details of how their two stories connect. But
well, thank you so much.
But they both want to leave.
I think it's fair to say. And I think storytelling to me, I think, is the art of meaningful contrasts. And I deliberately tried to create characters whose natural contrasts would spark enough of a tension or enough of a drama. And certainly, although their apparent differences seem to prevent them from reaching out to one another, the joy and I hope also emotion and pathos in the story is in seeing the ways in which they're not able to fully connect to one another.
Cemeteries say to Dilawar in the film, life is good in Kashmir. Outsiders don't get it?
Well, you know, that scene that you're referring to, the line is spoken by a tourist. And I put the scene in the film, although I didn't write that line. That was actually improvised by the actor, who himself was an actual tourist who saw that we were shooting a film and asked to participate. But tourism remains a crucial, if not central, means of survival for the people of the region. So to propose to make a film that deals with daily life in the region that fails to include the presence of tourism would be necessarily incomplete. And so I thought it was legitimately or dramatically credible to have the main character, among his other sort of gopher activities, be working as a tour guide.
Throughout the film, there are mentions of terrorist acts and violence, but no one seems to be all that disturbed by the news. Is violence just a normal part of life in Kashmir?
Well, I would certainly say so. I mean, as I said, I don't live there, so I can't speak for anyone but the film. But certainly this past summer, you could just look on the New York Times website and you can see all that happened this past summer. So there's a sense in which stress always manifests itself physically and physiologically in people. And so there's a general weariness, a certain wrinkling of the eyebrows, a certain hangdog facial expression, a certain stooping of the shoulders, which is clear enough from physical postures and the actors in the film. So you're able to extrapolate sort of the larger tensions that are in the air without having to say them aloud.
Weren't all of your actors amateurs?
That's correct. Every one of the people in the film is a first-timer, had no interest in acting, no desire to act. Many of them had never seen a camera before, much less been on camera.
The guy who plays Dilawar is also named Tapa. I'm assuming he's a relation.
He is a distant cousin. That's correct.
So what are some of the challenges of working with people who aren't used to being in front of a camera? Are there positives and negatives? For example, there were any number of filmmakers like Abbas Kiarostami of Iran who have said in the past they preferred to work with amateurs. Robert Bresson, the great French filmmaker, wanted to work with amateurs. Others say that's crazy.
Well, you've named some of my favorite directors, and of course the comparison is completely unwarranted. But
you're not as good as Robert Bresson?
Sad to say, not really. But but I would say that in terms of experience of working with non-actors, the advantage for me was that, at least initially, they didn't have any bad habits that they had to unlearn in terms of seeming artificial. The other thing was that they, without at all seeming to, in a very effortless way, they could project their own reality, their own aura, which in itself told the story much more eloquently than dialogue would. The downside of working with people who've never performed before is that they have no notion of how to analyze a script and prepare choices the way that a trained actor would. And so you have to be much more specific and much more clear about how you're going to direct them. Nothing happens unless you make it happen as the director. So you have to be very clear about what it is you're looking for.
Is there really a bridge called Zero Bridge?
Yes.
Do people recognize that is an odd or rather depressing name?
Well, it has an interesting history. The story that I've heard, I mean, the stories vary depending on who tells it. The one that I like the best goes that in the 19th century, Srinagar, the city of Srinagar, was first beginning to be formally organized. For the preceding 2,000 years, it had been an outpost along the Great Silk Route. And so traders, when they would come to what was known as the City of Seven Bridges, knew how to recognize it, that this was a place to set up camp. But in the middle of the 19th century, Christian missionaries began to try to organize and develop the city. And they built an eighth bridge, but nobody knew what to call it. So they just decided to call it Zero Bridge. And I always thought that that was quite interesting, because rather than allowing history to go forward, they, I guess, in a sense, just decided to, I guess, reset the clock. And I thought that that was quite eloquent for much of the history that has ensued since.
Tarek Tapa's film, Zero Bridge, opens tomorrow at Film Forum on West Houston Street. For screening information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much.